Welcome to this week's Podcast with a K, available on iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo.
Ladies and gentlemen, Podcast with a K, with me, Christian Corley, this week is, James and Brian will be along later to talk a bit more about Delta and the Bannerman. In the meantime, here's Gareth Cavanagh. Hi, Gareth.
Oh, can I talk now?
Yeah, you can talk now.
Oh, fine, yes. Hello.
Hello. How are you? How are you doing?
Oh, good. Oh, those lucky people watching Delta and the Bannerman.
Yeah, it's a good commentary, actually. It's a really good commentary.
It's one I've not watched for years and years and years. I remember being quite embarrassed by it when it went out on telly the first time. It was the time that I remember it was difficult to admit in school or anywhere else in polite society that you were a Doctor Who fan. But it's probably a lot better now because we don't have a cultural cringe.
Well, we don't have that. And also, I think... Certainly the second two McCoy series, they've aged quite well thanks to the direction, I find.
Oh, they're superb. There's Silver Nemesis, which is embarrassing, but that's mostly down to the direction, as you say. And there's Battlefield, which is a direction... It's a production shambles. Yeah. But if Graham Harper had directed it as he was supposed to, I think that's a stone-cold classic. Yeah. But you're right, both those years are good.
So we're here anyway, the two of us. We're not talking about Dalton and the Bannerman. So it's amazing how Dalton and the Bannerman, a story of kind of, I won't say mediocre, but kind of modest means, is getting two podcasts almost dedicated to it. But it's something quite big happening in the world of Doctor Who this month, which we're going to talk about because it is kind of current and now. And that is the 500th issue anniversary of Doctor Who magazine.
Amazing.
And as we couldn't get anyone from Doctor Who magazine, we thought we'll get the next best thing.
Well, this is true. We are their unofficial biographers, I guess. So, happy birthday, chaps.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's an amazing milestone. Have you worked out how old you'll be when Doctor Who 1000 comes out?
Have I? I should imagine...
I have. I'll be 83.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's going to be roughly 35 years, isn't it, or so?
Yeah. Monstrously embarrassing. Well, no, is it 35 years? Oh, or maybe I won't be quite as old.
Maybe a little more than that, but it's in that ballpark.
Yeah. That's fine. I'll only be 78. Sprightly. Might even, gosh. But it is amazing to think that magazine is going to outlast all of us. It's going to outlast the show. You know, it's like that Tom Baker speech in Ark in Space. You know, about outsitting eternity, indomitable. And it is. It's the ultimate piece of merchandise. It's the one that we've all bought at least once and most of us buy every month. It's it's the Doctor Who equivalent of going to church.
What was your first issue?
Number one.
One.
Yeah, although interestingly, it technically is my issue, because I was already getting Buster comic, and I was getting another one. My mum bought me one comic and she bought my brother one comic, and then me nan decided to get in on the act and she said, well, I'll buy you a comic each. And I went for probably Wizard and Chips or something else, or the Beano, and my brother didn't pick one. And of course Doctor Who Weekly came out and he said, oh, I'll have that, knowing that I loved it. Oh, big rows were had, because technically those first couple of dozen issues belonged to him. Oh. So when I started ripping them up, and putting the posters up, oh, there was a row. And that row actually rumbled on for about 10 years. I think I should just buy him issues 1 to 24, which he'll never read because he hates Doctor Who, just so we can put them in a cupboard. But anyway, yes, it is. That was my first issue, number one. And it is a magical publication. Absolutely magical.
My first was a summer special in 1994, which
Gosh, late adopter. That's not the unit one. Is that the Holmes one?
No, it is the first Doctor and seventh Doctor one.
Oh, the reversible one.
Yeah, that's the one.
With the reversible with the sort of comic strip that, that dovetails.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a nice intellectual little special, though.
I actually bought it to go on holiday, so I'm reading on a coach trip holiday down to the south of France. I thought I'd need something to read.
That's some chunky reading there.
So I took a few things. But yeah, so that was my first one, and I followed that up with the next issue, which I'm not sure what number it was, but it was the one with Janet Fielding wearing Tom Baker's maroon scarf.
I vaguely remember that. Yeah, yeah. And it's got Adrian Salmon's Cybermen in it, isn't it?
Quite possibly, yeah.
That's right. Well, do you know what? It's funny that. That reminds me of when you'd go on holiday, you'd buy a magazine, and it was all you had to read. I remember buying a particular issue of Spectrum User,
which had
Enduro Racer on the front, and we went to Tenerife, and I'd read it by the time we got off the plane, and it's all I had to read. So I read it, and I read it, and I read it, and I must have, you know, you start reading the adverts, and you start reading the classifieds, and you start reading and reading and reading and reading. I think I could probably recite that magazine back to front.
Did it have one of those? Did it have like 4 pages of code at the end to enter into your computer?
No, sadly not. Although I'd have analysed that. I'd have imagined typing it up. It makes you remember how sometimes holidays could be quite boring back then.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we could go on a massive diversion now, but I had a terrible holiday in Torquay once with my family. It was absolutely dreadful holiday.
Oh, do tell. Go on, do tell.
Oh, it was that age where you don't want to go on holiday with your parents, and I was going on holiday with my parents, so...
Yeah, and Torquay's a tough place to go at any age.
Well, there you go. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, Kerry and I have been to Torquay after... Was it just before we got married or just after we got married? And we had a lovely time. It was just the two of us, you know. And, you know, you can do stuff as grown-ups you can't do when you're 15.
Well, I did a job there 5 years ago, and I'd never been to Torquay, and I love Fawlty Towers, so I thought, oh, it's going to be like Fawlty Towers. And you know what? It was. It had that flock wallpaper, slightly musty, must be in the hotel by 11, you know, miserable breakfast service, quintessentially British.
Yeah.
And the whole conceit of it being the English Riviera was great, and they did have palm trees. But despite all that, I loved it. I thought it was cool.
There's two things happened on that holiday that really put me into a sort of conflict with my parents. One of them was I was absolutely desperate to track down the Glen Eagles Hotel, which is where the pirates
wasn't there.
Well, I think the Glen Eagles is in Torquay, but the place where they filmed Fawlty Towers, that wasn't in Torquay.
Oh God, yes, the Glen Eagles was there. Yeah, because that's where the pythons stayed. Yeah.
That's right.
Did you find it?
No. That was it's too late now because it's gone. That itself has also gone now. But no, that wasn't an option due to no one else wanted to do it. And the other thing was I wanted to stay in one day and watch the TV. Now, this was not because I was being lazy. This was because this was right in the middle of the Russian coup.
Oh gosh, I remember that.
Remember all the tanks rolling into Moscow?
Yeah,
all that? Yeah. And
yeah. I was working in a bar at the time, and we had a TV on on Sky News rolling. Yeah, that's when it all went to shit, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, can I say that? Oh, you might want to beat that.
Yeah. So yeah, and I wanted to watch that, and no one else did. But actually, I think I actually got my way that day for a few hours because it was quite.
So you wanted to watch Sky News, and they wanted to go out for a walk on the front. How miserable of them! This is history in the making.
exactly. But listen, Doctor Who magazine is celebrating its 500th anniversary issue. This issue, and now we've got a very special double issue magazine, haven't we? I mean, both of them are chock-a-block full of stuff.
Oh yeah, I mean the bonus.
You've got the bonus magazine with all the covers and the features with the editors, which is a really good read.
The bonus mag, yeah, as I like to think of it, is Warp 2.5.
Right,
it's an issue of Warp we haven't had to write. It's extremely good of them. Very, very nicely put together. And the stickers. Let's be honest, the stickers are tremendous.
Oh, yeah. I was expecting actual transfers, actually, so I was surprised when I pulled out the sheet of stickers.
Well, I can speak from personal experience here. Transfers are a sod.
Right.
It's a 70s technology. When we did Warp 1, and I went, oh, let's have transfers. What could be more cool than that? Oh, yeah, easy. Anyway, to actually do that, we had to source the transfer paper. We had to print them off. We had to trim them. It was a real bugger. I mean, they're like shrinky dinkies. I mean, I wouldn't mind doing shrinky dinkies at some point in the future on Warp, except I'm not sure anyone makes them.
What's a shrinky dinkies?
Do you not remember shrinky dinkies? Shrinky dinkies were the sort of free gifts that you got in things like Shreddies, and you'd put them in the oven and bake them, and then they would shrink and become these little sort of 3D sculptures. They're probably full of all sorts of chemicals that aren't safe nowadays.
No, I'm not aware of shrinky dinkies. I know people, we used to put crisp packets in the oven, didn't we, and make badges out of them and stuff like that in the 70s.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah, plastic crisp packets.
Wow.
Wrap them round. You just put them in the oven and they would shrink down, and then you'd trim round them and use them as badges.
Oh, wow. No, we never did that. Oh, that would have been right. A sort of Ringos and that.
Yeah. Well, did you have Ringos in the 70s?
Definitely.
Oh, right.
That was
okay.
The king of 70s crisps, Ringos.
Oh, right.
They're out now. If you try a pack of Ringos now, the memory definitely cheats, and they've definitely changed the formula.
Oh, they would.
It was terrible. Honestly, don't go near Ringos now. It's not the same. Unless you find like a pack that's been at the back of a shelf since 1978, I wouldn't go near it. Anyway, we were on Top 2 magazine, weren't we? It's a really loving piece of work. And the amazing thing is Doctor Who magazine also conveniently works as a spine throughout my life. You know, so I remember certain issues are seared into the memory. I remember I got it religiously till about issue 60. Then the newsagent changed, and the new newsagent told my mother, no, I can't get it. Sorry, can't get it. Because I just think he couldn't be bothered.
Yeah.
And that was...
Great way to run a business.
That was Mr. Evil newsagent, couldn't be bothered. So he stayed for 2 years. So I didn't get Doctor Who magazine for nearly 2 years. So I missed virtually all of Davison. So I had to really... I remember when I went to university, I found them in a shop and I religiously reread them. But there was one copy I got, which was on holiday, which is Doctor Who Magazine 82, when we were on holiday in Blackpool. And I thought Doctor Who Magazine had been cancelled because I hadn't seen it anywhere. And then suddenly it was there and I thought, bloody hell, I've missed out on 22 issues. It was the one with Sergeant Benton on the front. It's a very ordinary issue in many ways, but it's got... That's one of the reasons I love John Levine, because his smiling face on Doctor Who Magazine 82 kind of telegraphs for me that it's still there and there's this wonderful world. So I remember I went back and I said to my mother, I said, look, this magazine definitely exists. I've got it. Can we get it from the newsagent? Anyway, well, he said, no, I can't get it. Anyway, he sold the newsagent 2 months later, and the new guy came in, Cutthroat Keith, and Cutthroat Keith could get it for me. So
imagine the chances.
So from about Doctor Who 87 onwards, I got it. And it was so exciting. I mean,
that whole era of having to order magazines from the newsagents, have them reserved, it's gone now, hasn't it? And it was one of the crappiest things about growing up was having to have your newsagent order something in rather than just like having it on the shelf already.
Yeah.
But it can work both ways. When I was getting Transformers magazine, it was cancelled 2 or 3 times and it moved to different publishers after Marvel got rid of it, or Panini got rid of it. And I didn't have to reserve it. The newsagent would spot it and order it for me.
Oh, you see, you had a quality newsagent. But no, it's good old... well, actually, there's a newsagent coder here. So Cutthroat Keith gets it for me for a couple of years. Then I start doing a paper round for Cutthroat Keith for 2-3 years. So a very successful paper round, record-breaking tips at Christmas. I was a real, you know, I used to spend my time talking to the old dears on the round, how are you doing, and would you like, you know, can I get your pint of milk and this and that. Total concierge service. Anyway, I had this moaning bugger at the end of the round, Wally Bowers, and he complained that he was getting his newspaper late and he got me sacked. So I remember in outrage, we pulled all our orders, including Doctor Who magazine. And then out of protest, we had to walk to the newsagent that was half a mile up the road, Grumpy Derrick's. But Grumpy Derrick never missed an issue of Doctor Who magazine for me. Grumpy Derrick inherited a good 15 years of Doctor Who magazine. So,
Why was he grumpy?
I guess it's because he had every day at 5 o'clock and pencil on the top of his newspapers, you know, with the names for the paper rounds and all this and that and the other. And then he'd go off to the alehouse at 3 o'clock and have a good few quaffs and then repeat every morning. I suppose I'd probably be grumpy. I always found him very nice. I thought it was a bit unfair that everyone called him Grumpy Derrick, if I'm being honest.
That does seem unfair.
So Doctor Who magazine is a journey. I remember the first Doctor Who magazine I took with me to university. It's the Sea Devils cover from about 92. And again, I must have read that a million times because I had nothing else to read. And it's there like a spine. I remember I'd go back to my mother's and she'd have Doctor Who magazine waiting for me. It's always there. You know, there have been times of Doctor Who magazine's life where I've fallen out of love with it a little bit. I think they probably got the mix a bit wrong when the show came back because they just became a little bit too Isn't It Marvellous, which I think is all wrapped up in a cultural cringe because of the theory that it was us fans and things like DWB that had helped get it cancelled in the first place, which is probably not without merit. I think that every time that the, you know, the media wanted to find a moaning Doctor Who fan, they didn't have to look very far. But it's always been there and it's always had something to enjoy. There's always been something in every issue of Doctor Who where you go, or ooh, or I don't like that. And I guess if the show hadn't have come back, then Doctor Who magazine would now just be the world's most popular obituary magazine.
Do you have a favourite issue?
Oh, that's a very good question. Do I have a favourite issue? I'm very fond of the issue that they dedicated to the Master about 20 years ago with the Delgado cover and the Adrian Salmon Master strip. I'm quite fond of that one. I think that's a good one. Doctor Who Magazine 82 with John Levine on it, of course, because I knew that it existed. And Doctor Who Weekly 1, because that's where it all started. Incidentally, good pal of Warp Warps and fandoms in general, Des Skin, has done a very limited run of his dummy for Doctor Who Zero.
Right.
This is the dummy that he made up to take to DC Enterprises to just give an idea of what the magazine would look like, what would be in it. It's a wonderful piece. It really is. And this is what swung it. This is what swung it. So it's available, I think, at deskin.com or wherever. But it's a beautiful piece and there aren't many left, so it will go. But if you want to see what swung it, and what has gone on to create the world's longest running TV magazine. And it's a record that will never, ever, ever be beaten. And I it's going to outlast us all. That's the place to look.
Okay, excellent. Now, there's a couple of other things to look out for, dear listener. This got through issue 500. It's a good stepping on point for the comic strip because we've got a one-off comic strip. So from next week, there's a new
story. Beautiful, beautiful.
And it's a lovely story with a cavalcade of iconic Doctor Who magazine comic strip artist in there as well. And there's also an interview with Tom Baker coming up next time. And in this issue, there's also a look at the Doctor Who pitch from Mark Gatiss, Clayton Hitman and Gareth Roberts from 2001, which is worth your time, most definitely. So this is a rare advert for Doctor Who magazine. Doctor Who magazine, 500 issues. It's out now. Well done to everyone concerned and involved with DWM over the years.
We take it for granted, but it's the ultimate piece of merchandising. It's the ultimate part work to Doctor Who and indeed our lives, because as we've grown up with Doctor Who, so has the magazine and so have the people involved with it. It's a wonderful publication.
Absolutely. Hear, hear. Amen to that. Gareth Cavanagh, thank you very much for joining us this week.
It's incredible. So we've just finished watching this rather interesting, what we thought was a rather interesting episode. Do you have any more feelings on it?
I was curious what it was going to be like watching it a second time round, to be honest. I was hoping, obviously, we would find interesting things to say in a different light, and we did. But for the most part, we didn't repeat ourselves, which is great, which is kind of also sad because there's a lot of good stuff we spoke about before that people will never get to hear. But I was wondering, like, while I like the story, what was its rewatch factor going to be so soon after watching it?
Yes.
And you know, I really didn't have an issue. I enjoyed it. And obviously, I mean, it's one thing if you're just watching it for entertainment or doing a commentary on it. But I really felt it still held up to me. I didn't really find anything. We joked about a couple little production things throughout the way, but that was it. I still like the story. I still like how it unfolds, and I like the characters.
I think I've grown to love it more for exactly that reason. I've watched it again, and I just love the way it's shot. I just love this location. I love the feeling that this is one of the few Doctor Who stories which feels like the era it's meant to be in, and its production values don't deviate from that feeling. And you have this wonderful free roam of the area where there's very little areas which are repeated. You are constantly going to different spots throughout those three episodes, and the three episodes feels perfect for it. Four would have been too long.
Yes.
Two would have been too short. Three just sets this up really nicely, and you have this lovely movement from the future to the Wales, and Wales explored with all these different characters and lots of great extras. It doesn't feel like it's scrimped at all. Yeah, there are issues, as we said. Delta and Billy don't really work, and the troopers seem a bit daft. And yeah, I think McCoy is good for this episode, but he's not the McCoy that we get to know.
You know what, though? He's not the McCoy that we get to know, but he's also not the McCoy that started in Time and the Ranny. Like, he's already dulled down that kind of over-the-top parts where they were trying to force a characterization on him, and he's starting to build up to who he will be. So there's this kind of just, I don't know, part of me wonders if he had stayed this way throughout the rest of his era, if I would have felt as strongly about him as I did. But I definitely don't have an issue with him in the story. As we said before, he fits this story perfectly. The characterization that he plays is exactly what this story needed for him.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think he does seem to sit. And there's lovely bits in it, which we didn't really get to talk about this time. Little moments where he just seems so confident. And if you've not watched this, when you watch it, watch his acting, because he does some lovely little moments. There's a mixture of looking quite comfortable and yet quite vulnerable at times, and never out of place. While in Time and the Rani, he looks out of place. He looks very confused about what he's meant to be doing. And I think everyone seems to just not have a clue of how. And the story is just not helping him in any way. And even Paradise Towers, there's times where he still looks a little raw. But Delta and the Bannermen, I think, is one of his... is a really nice moment for him. Yeah, I prefer... It's my favourite, certainly, of this season. I mean, you're not sure. You like Dragonfire quite a lot, though, don't you, as well?
I like Dragonfire because I like Ace, but no, I think this one was more consistent because there were certain issues within Dragonfire where I felt, looking at the production and also the story, like its characterizations, let me say it that way. Dragonfire had some certain characterizations in it that just made me wonder, like, what they were thinking.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So this one stands out because aside from kind of failing Billy and Delta a little bit, I don't think anyone else had any incorrect characterizations, aside from aside from all the attention put on Rey, only for at the end them to change their minds that she's not going to stay. I'm just
looking at Wikipedia, and it says, to put this better into context, which we should do since people are listening for information as much as anything else, although mm-hmm. we could just check Wikipedia for this. The character of Rey was originally created as a new companion to the Doctor, as Bonnie Langford had announced that she'd be leaving at the end of the series. The season. The serial was originally scheduled to end the season. However, as the serial neared production, Langford had not decided whether she would leave at the end of season 24 or during season 25. That, plus the rescheduling of Delta and the Bannermen to be earlier in the season, and the decision by script editor Andrew Cartmell to create another replacement companion, led to the idea of Rey being abandoned. So it sounds like the initial idea was, because I sort of stumbled through that, that Bonnie Langford was not sure when she was going to leave, that Delta and the Bannermen was going to be the last of the series, so if she was going to leave in this series, Rey would have become the companion. But she wasn't sure what she was doing, and Delta and the Bannermen was moved to being slightly earlier, so it just sounds like that situation, if that detail is accurate, meant that Rey lost out on both counts. That Bonnie hadn't decided whether she was going to leave, and it was now too early to give her that position where she could become a companion. So that was dropped, and when Dragonfire came on and then Bonnie decided that she wasn't going to leave, they rewrote the end scene so Ace could join. I think that's how it went, because I'm pretty sure that last scene in Dragonfire was a lot of rewriting on that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to think how it even played out to see if it felt like a lot of quick rewriting on that. But it did. It did seem really odd that Mel was just all of a sudden like, "Yeah, sure, I'm going to go with Glitz now." You know, like it didn't really feel like they struck a relationship of any sort to make that even happen. You know, Ace's stuff seemed good. I don't really remember having an issue with Ace's stuff, but Mel leaving with Glitz was just such a weird thing to me.
Yeah, no, I'm sure I read, yeah, it was, you know, the speech about time and leaving, and, you know, you haven't been here, you haven't arrived yet. That was done very late on. Aldred actually auditioned for the part of Tomboy Rey in Delta and Bannermen, but lost the part to Sarah Griffiths. Alice's first appearance begins having of the Yeah, it's nothing there. I'm just, again, looking through Wikipedia to see if there's anything more we could add to that. But, yeah, no, it's a very interesting situation where you have a lot of different alternatives there. It could have been that Bonnie would have stayed on and season 25 would have had Remembrance of the Daleks with Mel.
Ooh,
it could
wow.
have been that Rey stayed on and you would have had Remembrance of the Daleks with Rey, because it would have been the end of the series, season 24, and she'd have stayed on through there. So...
Do you know, picture Remembrance of the Daleks with Rey. With Ace, it was a girl from the 80s who had somehow followed a time storm to go live in the future on some alien planet, but going back to the 60s. But with Rey, it would have just been a woman from the 50s who traveled to her future. And that would have been an interesting perspective. That would have been a lot more interesting. I mean, like, taking a new companion into the past is something we see all the time in this show. And of course, we get to see people in the future, but it's rare that they ever take us into the not too distant future. We did it with Rose, but I can't think of too many others that were brought just very shortly into the future. So with Rey, that would have only been like a 10-year thing, or if that was 1959, what was that story? I don't remember offhand. So it wouldn't have, I mean, would have only been a couple of years then, you know.
4 years.
So it wouldn't have been like a tremendous difference for her, but it would have been an interesting thing to get her perspective on what the 60s was like compared to what she knew.
You know, slightly disposed. I was going to say it'd be a slight disappointment for her to just go into the near future, but, you know, the near futures is quite a staple part of science fiction. Not particularly, as you say, with companions, but it would have been her near future as her very next story.
Yeah.
Slightly disappointing, maybe. You know, you've got this time machine. Oh, we're going to go 4 years into your future. Oh, we're going to a different country. No, we're going to London. So, yeah, no, it'd have been a very, very different situation if you put Rey in there, and that would have been quite fascinating. But obviously, it went to Ace.
Yeah, I was going to say it couldn't be the very next story, because it would have been Dragonfire still the next story, right?
Well, if Rey as it said there initially, Delta would have been the final of season 24, which would have been with the idea of Ray moving on if Bonnie had decided to go.
Oh, right. I see. Okay, so, I'm with you.
Yeah, but because they decided to move shift Delta, and because Bonnie still hadn't decided until coming up to production on Dragonfire that Ray was out of the picture, which is kind of unfortunate, really. Kind of lucky for Sophie Aldred in retrospect. But
sure.
Yeah, so no, brilliant. So anyway, we suppose we'd better come to the end of this. We're starting to overly debate this, but Delta and the Bannermen, really can't say enough about it. And it's taken two podcasts for me to really get behind it. And rather than it just being a sort of frivolous like of mine, I can actually see reasons why I think this is a genuinely very strong story of Doctor Who that you should watch. It's perhaps one of my favourites. Yes, another one of my favourites is The Keys of Marinus, so maybe people might think that they can discredit me for that, because I know it's not...
Oh, Keys of Marinus is a great story. Come on, what's wrong with people with that?
But I'm sure many people are a bit... but yes, it's one of my favourites, I think. Delta and the Bannermen, Remembrance of the Daleks... Oh. Black Orchid, Keys of Marinus.
You know, okay.
Remember the Robots of Death? Mm.
This is going to be my final thought then. Of course, I'm for Delta and the Bannermen, but I just had a thought for future Doctor Who stories. But Delta and the Bannermen is a great story. If you just watched it for the first time with us as a commentary, please go back and watch it without the commentary and focus on the story, focus on the characters, and enjoy it that way.
Stupid way of doing it.
Oh, jeez, what are you thinking? No, but it just made me. Keys of Marinus gave me a thought. We spoke not that long ago, and I hope it was on a podcast and not just us like speaking on our own. I believe it was a podcast, but about how the show rather should try and drop that kind of story arc feature and just go to more split individual stories, or if they're going to do a focused story arc, then they should make it be like, you know, a Dalek war or something like that. So like a 6-part Dalek war. Well, picture the new series doing a Keys of Marinus type story where each episode, just like the Keys of Marinus, took place in a different location on the same planet that story is focused on. You know, we would and do it the same way as Keys of Marinus, where like it's not just like, okay, well, like Genesis of the Daleks, we're either in the Khaled Tower or the Thal Tower. You know, like, no, don't do it like that. Do it like Keys of Marinus, where basically one episode is set in Florida, another episode is set in England, another episode is set in Spain. You know, it's just all these different locations within one planet to really get a sense, to really finally do something the new series hasn't done and show us what an alien civilization is like. And not just showing that one location that you end up on an alien planet like Skaro is all that planet has to offer. You know, I mean, when you think about it, Khalids and Thals, you know, like, is there another race of people on that planet that we just don't know about because they're on the other side of the planet? You know, do they have their own Africa? You know, because I don't see any black people in their race. I don't see any Asian people in their race. You know, like, what else do they have to offer on that planet? I would like to get to know a planet more. And I think a Keys of Marinus type story handled well would work as a very interesting technique to tell a story arc in a new series.
Well, it goes back to what can new Doctor Who learn from old Doctor Who, and I think there are stuff that perhaps has been overlooked, things like Keys of Marinus and things like Delta and the Bannermen, which could offer fresh insights. I think Delta and the Bannermen particularly works on its entirely outside location and that exploration of Britain of part of Britain in a certain period, I think would be really interesting to be done on today's budget.
Yeah.
And see what they can do. Or I totally agree with your point. I would really like to see a sort of Keys of Marinus approach to a society and really flesh something out. I think that, as we've said before, the show has become very Doctor Who, Doctor-centric, and perhaps it needs to step back and look at those worlds and universes that it has created and perhaps explore them a bit.
I would also like to see a character like Rey at some point. You know, a strong woman with you know, typically male skills from an era where that is what it would be considered. You know, nowadays a female mechanic is just normal. But take a companion from the 50s and put them in the new series, because we don't get that all our companions have been contemporary in the new series, yeah. except for a couple of future ones, you know. So I would like to see something like that. Take a companion who's kind of breaking the stereotypes within their own particular era, in air quotations there. And I think that would be a very interesting thing to see. And I know they kind of do that nowadays more so with storytelling to just break the stereotypes, break the old-fashioned thought and so on. But I would like to see a companion that isn't from contemporary Earth. I would like to see somebody like what they tried to do here with Rey, but actually make it work, bring them into the show rather than write them out at the end of it. Because I think she would have been interesting. Oh, and this is another thing we spoke of, too, for those of you who haven't heard of it. Check out Big Finish, because Big Finish did a series of about 3 or 4 plays where the Doctor actually does travel with Rey. And they were actually pretty good stories. So I think that would be a fun thing for everybody to check out there if you liked Rey and you were interested in seeing more of her as a companion, which we didn't get within the show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Maybe. Did they explain where she goes to after she leaves the group of companions in the final scene? Is an immediate adventure that follows her around that bush that she seems to be heading towards.
Oh my God, that'd be hilarious. She just turns the bush and there's the Doctor going, you know, I had this thought. Aren't you just around the corner? Didn't I just leave it? No? Well, yes, but no. Yes? No. Anyway. Good time.
Yes, and he says, you could be my companion. But then someone else comes along and goes, actually, no, sorry, got to go already. I know we've just met again in a short period, but if you could just drive off in that direction there, but don't accidentally go past the previous version of me you've just passed, because that would be awkward. Oh, bless him. Bless her.
Just behind that blue box over there is another blue box. Go in that one. Don't go in the front one. That's not mine. That's his. You just left him. You got to go in mine. I'm over there. Okay, look, this is confusing. I really don't want to go with you. No, really. It's okay, Ray. Go. Yeah. Loser again, just with the whole time travel craziness.
She does have a sort of slight feel of loser about her, which is a terrible thing to say. But it is all to do with that last... Well, I mean, she's a loser throughout in the sense that... Not that she should be... romanticizing. I don't agree with that at all, but it's just losing the sense that she is romanticizing over someone who clearly has no interest. It's sort of like, you know, oh dear, you know, get over that. And she does get over it, but what does she get as a reward? I think the problem with her reward is that she gets the motorbike, which is kind of cool because she's a mechanic, she likes that bike, and it means that she's not you know, needing a man. But at the same time, it is almost like it's a gift from him, isn't it? It's a sort of like, I don't know, it's not even a good gift because he doesn't need it anymore. It's not like, if he could take it with him, he'd have probably taken it. But it's like, I don't want the bike, why don't you have it? Sorry, you know, it's a bit of a pity gift, isn't it? It's just like a bit of a...
I kind of get a sense too that he only left it behind because he's like, well, crap, there's no room on the spaceship for this thing. Yeah, because he didn't give her the guitar. You know, he didn't sit there and think, hey, maybe this is good. No, it was just, I can't fit this thing. Here you go, Rey. I sat on it once. That should make you happy, right?
Exactly.
You like me. It's terrible.
It feels a bit like he should offer it to her and she should turn around and go, actually, no, you know, I think all that's been in the past. I think I might actually get into the camp business. Or she might have even perhaps had to say, actually, no, you're not really my thing. Leader guy here from the war, he's really cool and quite sexy, so I'm going to actually spend time with him instead, you know.
yeah
but I suppose that would have paired her up mandatorily with another man, so that doesn't work either.
Well, okay, then the ending that I would have given it would have been, he goes to give her the bike and then she's like, yeah, you know, you're not really a good mechanic, there's too much I have to do to save that bike, so thanks very much, I'll just go make one of my own, see you later, peace out everyone.
Yeah, this is the problem, isn't it? And I can almost see the issues they had is, how do you get rid of Rey? How do you get rid of Rey in a way which gives her a little bit of dignity, which is clearly what they're trying to do. They're trying to give her dignity, and they just don't know how.
Yeah.
Oh, poor Rey. I don't know what the right outcome was for you.
She actually, rather than seeming... I'll just say it this way. She actually just seems a little bit more confused by what she wants in life, you know? Like, here's Billy, like, oh, Billy, I want Billy, oh, this is the best thing in the world, oh, I can't have, oh, you're giving me a motorcycle, oh, I want this motorcycle, this is the best thing in the world, I really like this, like, she just doesn't know what she wants, like, maybe she hasn't figured out her life yet, maybe she should have gone with the Doctor and figured out what she wants out of life.
Yeah, I kind of, I sometimes wonder maybe that would have been a better ending if they'd actually said, if the Doctor turned to her and said, you know, Billy had gone and said, is there anywhere I can drop you off? Is there anything you'd like to see? You know, she didn't have to become a companion. He could have just taken her somewhere that she'd like to go to. So it's like, you know, I'd love to, she said, I'd love to go and see the, you know, American Disneyland, or I'd love to go to Planet Mechanic, I don't know, you know, or just something that felt like, I think the problem is, it's just everyone, it's like, since she gets on that bike, everyone's forgotten about her. And that's where it kind of feels like, because no one really gives her anything apart from the hand-me-down from the guy who's just dumped her, or dumped her friendship for this guy, girl he met 2 days ago.
And you know what, though, like, if probably what would have been a really good ending there actually would have been the Doctor asking her, is there anywhere I can take you, or would you like to come with me, and have her actually just be kind of like, no, I'm good here, thanks.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been addressed. It would have been her choice.
Absolutely. So I think that's why she looks so sad when she heads away, because no one seems to want to spend time with her after all that.
Yeah.
There's no one seems to be interested. She just has a bike and she goes. And again, we can tell obviously now that this is to do with the fact that it wasn't written to be that way. And they just had to find a way of outing her from this scene. But yes, it brings a very fascinating... So, you know, if you guys are listening to this and you have any ideas of how you'd like to have... handled Ray better in the end, just let us know, especially on the Facebook. This is the podcast with a K. Just leave us a message there. That's the easiest route. But anyway, I think we're over time, so we're going to go now and leave you. We will be back with another set of stuff, commentaries, videos, I think, are going to be happening. So keep on board and keep on board. Where do I come from? Who says keep on board? Doesn't mean anything. With that, I think I'm going to get on my motorcycle and drive behind the nearest bush and perhaps hang my head in shame like Ray. See you later.
Until next week.